Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. Have we wasted a good crisis? Yeah, hi, I'm Paul, and I will be your host this evening, or at least co-host, and we'll be having a chat about how has rugby been changed by COVID in 2020 for more long-term rather than the immediate changes. Because as they say in business, don't waste a good crisis, basically for making changes that you need to do. And joining me to talk about all that kind of stuff is Mr. Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, good evening, Paul, and season's greetings to all our viewers and listeners out there on NZ Sports Radio. And once again, a privilege and a pleasure to be on the show.
Exactly. Yeah, sorry. Happy birthday. Jeez. Wrong. Merry Christmas, everybody. Deary me. Yes. This is our first show since Christmas Day. So well, on the rugby side, anyway, we had the swinging from the hip last night. And hopefully we'll be getting our A-League show up and running soon as well. But before we get into our main topic, Stephen, you said there was a bit of sad news you wanted to first talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it's a season where everybody's in holiday mode, Paul, you know, whether you're taking time out with family or even hanging out with friends over the Christmas New Year period. But for a couple of families this year, it'll be sadder than normal, because on Boxing Day, one of two men killed in a serious Boxing Day crash was 20-year-old Vilamani Meru Te Tau. Now, he was the father of one. He's a former New Zealand Māori under-18 rugby player. He played 2019 for New South Wales Country, and he was a Premier Rugby player for the Waitemata Rugby Football Club in 2020. So we just want to send our condolences from New Zealand Sport Radio, especially to all family and friends concerned. But also on behalf of, there was another young lad also killed in the same accident. There were four boys in that particular car coming back from an early morning night out. We don't know the full circumstances, but once again, just a pointer to us all how life can be so fickle. I know we talk about rugby on the show, and unfortunately it's going to be a sad time for the Waitemata Rugby Football Club, so our thoughts and prayers go out to the everybody concerned, especially the family of Viliami, and of course the other boy concerned as well, Paul. It certainly is a little bit of a problem out there, and boy, we just want everybody to be safe. Yeah, have a good time, but it's really more importantly about getting home, isn't it, Paul?
Absolutely, it is. Now, please, folks, please do drive safely and do slow down when you are driving. There's a lot of cars on the road. A lot of people driving long distances they don't normally do on unfamiliar roads as well. Look, living in a small town. In New Zealand, we don't have a professional fire service. We have a volunteer fire service, which means that the siren goes off every time they're being called out. And over the last week, it has been going off daily, whereas normally it goes off once every week or 2 weeks. And that's mainly down. And we've also heard the air ambulance flying in as well. So it's always sad when you hear that the helicopter and also that siren as well. So please, folks, do drive safely on the roads this festive period. Moving on from that sad news is let's move on and let's talk about some rugby then. And look, there's a saying in business that says never waste a good crisis. Now, I think if we wind back to sort of March-ish, probably March, April, there was a lot of fear, obviously, a lot of uncertainty going on. I think a lot of people were scared that various rugby clubs would perhaps disappear. But also, there was also this underlying point of, is this the time? Is this the opportunity? If not now, then when will we actually see some real proper change around things like player welfare, a global calendar, the number of games they play? Is this the big opportunity to make those changes right now where there's a little bit of, there's a lot of pressure on finances and World Rugby could have potentially use that as a bit of a lever to try and make change, etc. Stephen, though, we haven't seen many teams go under. I mean, we've lost the Kings, is perhaps the and the Jaguares. Those are perhaps the only two teams, professional teams at least, anyway, at top level, that I can think we've lost. So from that point of view, we haven't, from a good side, we haven't lost teams like people were fearing we might do.
Yeah, it's a good thing that we actually start with the pluses. I think the pluses were, I think a lot of professional teams were able to survive. Sure, there were some, and even the semi-amateur teams, if you could throw probably minor team cup clubs into that bracket as well. Sure, they had to make some cuts here and there. But, I think the overall basic lesson, especially for us down here in New Zealand, just being without rugby and having a bit of a break from it made us really hungry for the game again. So we always said, it sounds like you've got the Grand Prix going on in your outside your back door down there in Waihipo.
I'm just trying to quickly do the news.
But what I was saying is just in and around not having that rugby that's so important to a country like New Zealand, and all of a sudden we didn't have, let alone rugby, any sort of sport for a long time, and I think it just made people hungry for it. And I think there was a few things thrown at the administrators there, whether in the case of rugby is less more. That was sort of one thing to come out of it. But on saying that, when you have got professional teams, they've still got to get paid at the end of the day, and the broadcasters who are also basically looking around scratching for sport, they basically want some professional sport happening. So yeah, there were a few top end lessons I think we learnt immediately, Paul.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Having from our previous conversation, you might be able to hear the siren going off in the background as the firemen have been called out yet again, unfortunately. I've done a couple of conversations, had a chat with the CEO of Northland, Campbell. Also had a chat with the general manager of Southland. I've just gone blank to his name, as well as the CEO of Tasman as well. Now, the Tasman one I haven't published. I'm sorry about that. I'll get that one out hopefully over the next couple of days. But the good news from all of them was that all of their clubs have survived. Now, have all of them survived totally intact? No, they haven't. As we say, a lot of people had to make cuts, but they're all still there. And especially for these rural unions, where these clubs are a big part of the local community, it's important that they have survived. So they have survived on the whole. So, as you say, some lessons there, though, as you said, was less is perhaps more. And also local is strong as well. Basically, where people have got an emotional connection to the team. Also, I think that was also the big thing as well. So, rugby administrators, if you're a membership person, don't worry about how many memberships you sell this year or you sell next year. Worry about the emotional connection that your fans or your supporters have with the club. And your membership numbers will look after themselves. But unfortunately, that's not how many membership managers are after. So that's the good side. The Kings, look, the Kings were going to disappear, go under it sooner or later. I mean, they've had poor management for many years. This was merely sped things up to see them go bust and go under. Unfortunately, look, it's an area of South Africa that should have a team, that but unfortunately, look, the administration has just been absolutely abysmal there. So about that one. The other team to go is obviously the Jaguares, unfortunately, and that's because of the change to Super Rugby that I think we all, again, we all knew needed to happen, but it just did happen. So it's unfortunate that we did lose that there. Simon asking, did we read the article about the Pacific Island franchise in the New Zealand Herald yesterday? No, I didn't read that one, unfortunately, so I'm not sure what was said in there. So we've lost basically two teams, which is actually a very low low amount of damage to the team from that point of view. But what changes have we seen? And I'm not talking about necessarily changes for this season or for next season, but what are the long-term changes that we're seeing here? To me, the only long-term changes that we've really seen have been is that Super Rugby South Africa and Argentina will leave Super Rugby. We already knew Japan was, and therefore we'll end up with a Far East time zone Super Rugby tournament with basically New Zealand and Australia, potentially Japan, potentially the Pacific Islands, potentially some teams out of Southeast Asia, but essentially in this time zone, we'll end up with some sort of Super Rugby competition. Looking at what they're doing next year, it's going to be it's not going to be that different to, it's not going to be a slimmed down version. All the Super Rugby franchises said they needed at least six to eight home games to break even, which is leads you to a 16 game season, which is what they had before, over 18 weeks. So and that's what we're heading back towards again, is a 12 team tournament is what they're talking about, with a round robin, which means you have at least 11, which you're either talking 11 games or 22 games potentially, depending on quite how you do that. So basically, Super Rugby, whilst it is changing its time zone, the length of it is pretty much going to be the same. Is all the indications that we're seeing. So your lessons of less is more, Stephen, really haven't been heard there. And also, the All Blacks are talking about playing 15 Test matches next year.
Yeah, not at all. And once again, Paul, it comes back to the old revenue gathering exercise. Obviously, the broadcasters are still wanting content because they've got to survive. So they then therefore put the pressure, the broadcasters put the pressure on to rugby to come up with more content. So, I guess in what's been a tough COVID year where money's obviously, it's money that the unions are more important than the rugby union have lost. They've got to recoup that from somewhere.
Yeah. So the positives are we'll actually be able to, we won't have to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch a rugby game. For Super Rugby, but the negatives are the players are going to be playing the same number of games as they've always played, and as far as I can tell from a marketing point of view, there seem to be very few lessons learned about building that relationship between the fans and the franchises and the teams, and it's still all about how many tickets can we sell this week, rather than how many people can we bring in and have as lifelong members who have a real emotional attachment to the team. So again, that short-term thinking seems to be continuing. So that's, to me, that's the kind of the negatives on a local basis. It looks like the Mind 10 finish their sponsorship at the end of this year. So it'd be interesting to see who who will step up and be the title sponsors of the NPC next year, because currently there's been no announcement of that But if you listen to our show last week, you'll know that this is the sort of thing that New Zealand Rugby wouldn't talk about until something is absolutely cast iron, written, signed in blood. They won't even mention that they're looking for sponsors or in discussions with sponsors until it's done. But clearly, those discussions must be taking place at the moment. And I think the crowd numbers for quite a lot of the provinces will have been disappointing for New Zealand Rugby as far as that goes. Obviously, they weren't helped by us being, I think, level 2 or level 3 at the time. Hence the first couple of rounds couldn't have crowds. Even so, I think they struggled with crowds again this year.
I think Paul also going right into the start of the cricket season probably didn't help. Going into summer sport territory, you know, traditionally Māori Team Cup usually finishes around about the third week of October, but I think we had rugby going through to late November, which just seemed unusual, being played in 25 degree heat in some cases. So it was a little weird.
Well, if you think about it, the Maori All Blacks versus the Moana Pacifica, that was the first weekend of December, which was the end of the season. But it did feel like to me this time that there was a real end to the season. Whereas in normal years, where you have that Māori Ten Cup through to like the end of October, the Rugby Championship this year finished on the same weekend as that Moana Pacifica game. It brought a real conclusion to the season. Whereas the Rugby Championship tends to end, then you've got the third Bledisloe Cup game, then you're into November internationals overseas, and it kind of peters out. There isn't that real crescendo or that real sort of demarcation of, right, the season's stopped, folks. Let's have some time off. It kind of drags on in normal years. So from that point of view, I thought I liked that narrative. But I know we're not going to get that again.
Yeah, it's really like you say, it is pretty weird. That season just goes on and on and on. And it's almost like, I think if you're a supporter, you're almost thinking, oh my God, I'm totally over it. Try and end it here, end it now. It's like the injured animal with a broken leg. You need to put it down, sort of thing. Paul, so yeah, pretty crazy, really. I suppose from a New Zealand's perspective, though, they could be really thankful that they were still able to get crowds along, as they were in Australia as well. You know, you kind of look at the Gallagher Premiership being played in stadiums with really only the reserves and coaches watching the games. You know, New Zealand probably not in too bad a place. But on saying that, I think they went through a little stage where I think they got a bit big for their boots, Paul, round about the stage where they were getting really, really big crowds. Hey, look at us, how great we're going at the moment. We don't need Australian rugby. We don't need South African rugby. So during that point of time, there was a degree of arrogance from the NZRFU because they kind of looked around and, hey, we're the only ones going. Everybody's watching our game. We're watching big crowds. And, man, I don't know if that was the time to really spout, if you know what I mean, because things could change in an instant. And, of course, they did. The last round of games was, well, some games were played in front of no crowds. And, of course, the very last game of the season was pulled altogether.
Yeah, no, look, they were, you've got to wonder if they've learned anything from that again, because, again, it's all the announcements around the potential 11th and 12th teams are coming out of New Zealand Rugby. It's not a joint thing with Australian Rugby. You're hearing nothing out of Australian Rugby around this. So how much of it is a collaboration? How much of it is just New Zealand Rugby saying, we're going to have a Fiji team, we're going to have a Moana Pacifica team? End of story. And Australia, you've got to put up with that. So, again... That sense of collaboration really doesn't seem to be there, which is a strange one.
I was about to say I'm not even sure with Andy Marinos joining Australian Rugby as their CEO, I'm not even sure if there's a Sansa around at the moment.
Well, so, Sansa is around purely for the Rugby Championship. From now on, let's be blunt. With South Africa, we're kind of moving on to this now, moving into the Pro 14. And with Australia and New Zealand organising their own Super Rugby competition, they've been allowed to keep that name. Yes, you're right. Sanzar now is purely about the international game rather than about the domestic club game or franchise game, whatever you want to call it. Simon makes a point that it's weird watching the South African Curry Cup at this time of year. Mm. Absolutely. And again, there's been a... And I think the Curry Cup will continue. I don't think it will continue in the form it's taken this year, which has been basically a two-round event with the four Super Rugby teams, the Cheetahs, the Pumas, and the Griquas. So seven teams there. It has been reduced to a one-leg game normally, and I think they'll probably revert to that next year or with that one. But we have had the announcement of the Rainbow Cup, which will see the Stormers, Lions, Sharks, and Bulls play a cup with the Pro 14 teams. So the four teams from Ireland, the four teams from Wales, two from Scotland, and two from Italy, in a two-conference affair, which has basically taken the Super Rugby sides into that Pro 14. The Cheetahs obviously getting kicked out, which is of that competition, they're now looking at trying to put them into a competition with tier two club sides in Georgia, etc. But we'll talk about that in a second. Do I expect that format to continue? No, I think we're going to end up with a Pro 14 that runs from your sort of September. What did I call it? Science is Rainbow Cup. Yes, I thought it was Rainbow Cup. September through to through to sort of your May time. I think, yeah, long term, that's going to be a Pro 16 with those extra two teams in there. So South Africa getting aligned time zone wise with Europe, to me, makes sense. I'm just not sure that we'll have to wait and see what format it comes with. But that travel is going to be a killer for a lot of players. I think we've seen with Super Rugby, look, that long distance travel is a bad piece for it. I think the model that Super Rugby is going for next year with a domestic round and then a sort of cross-country competition is probably a better way to go. Again, for South Africa, positive is they're getting aligned in time in a time zone and also with countries that have got potentially decent economies. So financially wise, it could work out for them. The disadvantage there is they've still got long distance travel there. So if we then move on to look at Europe, though, essentially situation normal. They've decided that they're not going to make any changes at all and just prop up what is quite clearly a unsustainable. I mean, the entire rugby setup is unsustainable. New Zealand admits it's making been saying it's going to be making an unsustainable deficit, or which means a loss every year. We know Australia is in financial strife with Andy Marinos at the head of the helm now, who did such a fantastic job at Sanzar, seeing that go downhill. Super Rugby and the Rugby Championship both going downhill, reduced numbers, etc. over the past decade, I guess. Not so much on the Rugby Championship side, but definitely on Super Rugby. How he's got the job, I've got no idea. Up in Europe, you've got Nigel Melville, who basically bankrupted USA Rugby, has now been put in charge of the Gallagher Premiership. And you're like, well, seriously, all these guys who've been doing some pretty lousy jobs as CEOs, just getting of various organisations, just getting another CEO position and another organisation to wreck. So congratulations to the Gallagher Premiership. You are basically at some point in the near future going to be bankrupt. And just this CVC's come in and put money into the Pro 14, the Gallagher Premiership. I don't think the deal's quite finalised yet on the Six Nations. I think they're also looking at the top 14 as well. So clearly their influence of trying to bring people together hasn't really helped, because all they've done is, I say, just stayed with the same situation and not helped with any player welfare, not helped with improving their income. It all just seems to be just the same normal mess we have in Europe.
Status quo.
Yep. There has been one slight change, which is the idea of a World Club competition every 4 years, or every 2 years, I guess, with the idea being that the European Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup, or the Heineken European Champions Cup, sorry, excuse me, its proper name, take place throughout the season normally. The idea is that actually that would be done away with. They would move the European, so the European season would finish earlier, and there would be a solid window at the end of the European season, the end of Super Rugby, to have a World Club competition before the July internationals. Your thoughts on that one, Steve? Do you like this idea of the Crusaders taking on Leinster?
Well, that'll be good, given that the New Zealand super franchises are all now known as clubs. which is still a bit of a hard one to get your head around it. But I suppose whatever rocks their world. But you know, I kind of look at this, Paul, and I think still not addressing the problems that the game has. Let's just go and throw another competition out there when we're talking about how much rugby these guys are playing. Seriously, then comes the question, where are you going to play these? Are they going to be on a home and away basis, or do you pay them up in the Northern Hemisphere 1 year, Southern Hemisphere in the next? How does this work?
Well, those sort of details haven't been played out yet. But basically, yes, at the end of the day, what's Europe's trying to do is it's trying to say, hey, look, we don't want to play club games during international weekends because we want our internationals to play. Okay. But we don't want to reduce any games. So you want your internationals to play 22 domestic competition games, another six European games. On top of that, potentially another five rounds of knockout competitions as well for those games. And on top of that, another 11 to 14 test matches. These guys are going to get broken, at least with Super Rugby. At least with Super Rugby, they don't have it's been kept at 16 games plus three playoffs, which is down from the 28 that the Europeans play plus knockout, so 12 games less. So yes, you've got to say that that needs to be sorted out, because at the moment, yeah, just shuffling the calendar around and playing the same number of games, doesn't help with player welfare, doesn't help with making sure you have your top talent available for your top competitions. Therefore, if you haven't got your top talent, then the value goes down, and therefore you make less money. You do need a Mitre 10 Cup, Curry Cup style competition where for your non-internationals get enough rugby in, but Europe just doesn't have that available to them, and they don't seem to be willing to put in that third tier. They just want to play a two-tier system where you've got club and an international.
We can't even get they can't even get the one season together, so they're asking teams of their respective winners of their divisions whether they, say for example, if you've got the Heineken Cup or European Cup, which normally traditionally finishes in what, round about April, May, Paul? And then you've got Super Rugby that finishes what, a little bit later. Is it June? Normally June, July.
Well, they both have been finishing traditionally in May for the June international window, right?
Yes.
Then Super Rugby would come back for July, August. All of these competitions are going to be finishing in June, ahead of the July international window.
Wow. Okay. That actually might work. I'm just trying to think the Six Nations, that's normally in February, isn't it? January, February?
February, March, yeah.
February, March. So, yeah, it's conceivably, I mean to say, you probably feel a bit for some of the Northern Hemisphere clubs. It'll be a case of last man standing after their top guys have smashed themselves playing international rugby, Gallagher Premiership finals, European Cup finals. Because I remember, I would imagine there'll probably be your cream, which will rise to the top, which will be your Leinsters. And if I can just use Exeter Chiefs as an example, maybe from France, maybe La Rochelle or somebody like that. Man, they will be bashed up. No question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so their season is going to end at the end of July. They'll basically have August off if they're lucky, back into preseason in September. And off they go all over again. For an October start. So yes, thank you for Simon's just let us know that actually a different investor, it's not CVC that invested in top 14, but it is the Nova Pena equity firm. There we go. So that's also going to be interesting when you have different investment companies in different leagues. How well are they going to play together? They're not known for being collaborative at the best of times. So that's going to be interesting. So from a tier one point of view, we've seen some changes for, well, basically New Zealand, Australia, the domestic competition has become more time zone aligned, which is good, but their marketing doesn't seem to have improved. And Australia seem to have a questionable choice of man at the top of the, at the helm. We also really have to question the New Zealand CEO who's coming this year, as you say, has led to a more arrogant, at least outward-facing approach by the union. Over in South Africa, they've managed the positives. They've managed to align themselves by time zone, but have decided to basically give the chop to the cheaters, which could lead to commercial, could lead to legal action. And they still have long distance traveling. As far as Argentina is concerned, they've lost the Jaguares, but they do have their international, they do have domestic professional competition set up across South America, which is good. I mean, it's a long way to go. It's below 9 or 10 cup level at the moment. And unfortunately, most of their internationals are now playing overseas. Europe, as we say, pretty much situation normal, all messed up. The World Club competition, would be played once every 4 years. But from a tier two point of view, what has this meant? Well, it's meant that Japan took the year off, but were invited to the Autumn Nations Cup. Georgia were invited to the Autumn Nations Cup and showed that they're not anywhere near strong enough to get into the Six Nations by losing all of their games. Fiji was invited to the Autumn Nations Cup and unfortunately got COVID and missed all their games apart from beating Georgia at the end of it. The other big fallout, really, apart from all of that, is over in the Americas, where the ARC, America's ARC, is that right? I also got the name. Basically, the rugby championship, the America's rugby championship over there looks like that has died a death. And this all comes down to disagreements over over qualification to the Rugby World Cup, and also probably also have some politics going on there around the non-election of Augustin Pichot as World Rugby head. Basically, the South Americans no longer want. So historically, the way that it's worked, World Rugby is that North America, essentially USA and Canada, play each other. The winner gets into the Rugby World Cup. The loser plays the best team from South America, who hasn't automatically qualified, i.e. not Argentina, against Uruguay, and then the loser of that one goes into the repechage. What South America is saying is they shouldn't have to play off against North America, and that their best team should just go straight through every World Cup, which you can understand. And hence the ARC has unfortunately collapsed, which basically was the America's Six Nations. It had the Canada, USA, the Argentina 15 or Argentina B team, Uruguay, Brazil, and Chile. Now, this is sad for me because it gave all those teams a competition to play in, and actually guaranteed games every year. Now, without that, America's Rugby Championship, the USA have no fixed tournament they play. So they don't know who they're going to play each year. They'll play Canada, obviously, but they don't get to build up those rivalries that we see in the Rugby Championship between New Zealand, South Africa, Argentina, and Australia. So I think it's a backward step losing the America's Rugby Championship. But I do understand Uruguay's point of view that, hey, why should they have to play off against Northern to make it into the Rugby World Cup? Paul, also, I think it's helped. Sorry, Stephen.
Paul, I was about to say, how much has COVID played a part as well? We know that the Brazilian Prime Minister was a little bit, very slow to react. We know that the President of the United States has been slow to react with COVID. How much of that has played a part in the competition falling over as well?
Well, obviously, it's killed the competition for this year. Don't get me wrong, but it's killed all sorts of other competitions, but they've always said that they're going to come back next year. This one looks dead and buried. So yes, COVID hasn't helped, but I think the falling out between them hasn't helped. The other thing that's also that I think also be part of it is that, remember, the America's organization voted one for Augustin Pichot and one for Bill Beaumont, and then Canada also voted for Bill Beaumont as well. So you've got to say, I think politically that also didn't help as well. Steve, you got to say the North America and South America haven't been getting on particularly well in rugby terms recently. As Simon says, yeah, you got to feel sorry for the States, because the America's Rugby Championship clearly could have been commercially viable as well. Because you look at you've got the American economy, the Canadian economy, both in there, as well as talking about Brazil. You got some big economies, quite a bit of money potentially there for advertisers and sponsors to get involved with. So it's a real shame that the IRC has collapsed there. But yeah, to me, that's all the change we've seen from COVID. And it's when I think we're talking about ripping up the entire calendar and starting again. It's been a bit disappointing, really.
Oh. Yeah, for sure, Paul. I suppose it'd be remiss of us not to mention women's rugby as well, because obviously if we think back to when New Zealand rugby kicked off and started, boy, the silence in and around women's rugby from the New Zealand Rugby Football Union was actually quite deafening. And listen, it probably took a wee bit of an outcry. Now, forget the girl's name who played for Wellington, who pretty much jumped on the press and basically said, hey, you've put us up there in terms of the fastest, women, females have obviously grown the sport in New Zealand. We've got the Rugby World Cup next year, but in terms of what's happening with Farrah Palmer Cup, your silence is deafening. If I recall, that was earlier in the year. That was the Wellington rugby player. Just their name escapes me.
Yes, someone that I follow on Twitter, and yeah, we've tweeted back and forth. You're right, I've just gone blank to her name as well. She put out a tweet recently saying that she's financially worse off, she's actually feels much better in herself, and she's had a TV show as well with Sky, which has been good. So yeah, it's Alice Soper.
Alice Soper, yeah.
Is the person that we're talking about there. I think what we expected happened there was that we lost the Wallaroos games, we lost the England Test matches. The Women's Six Nations, some of it managed to happen, but not all of it. We've had the, as we discussed in the last week, I think it was 2 weeks ago, sorry, the PAC 4, last week we discussed it, PAC 4 has been announced, which is Canada, USA, New Zealand, Australia women's tournament is going to be going ahead in annually in future, by the sounds of things. Next year, they're hosting it in New Zealand. Now, the USA Rugby has talked about this women's international competition, but New Zealand Rugby has, as I say, not said a word about it. But look, clearly it's been agreed. So from a women's point of view, look, there is some growth there. Now, has it had anything to do with COVID? I'm not so sure. I think the top countries outside of the Six Nations were looking at how could they put together a regular tournament that allows them to play women's rugby, because at the moment there's nothing for them. It's good to see that the PAC 4 has grown out of that.
Paul, one thing I will say about the local game, I think women's rugby in New Zealand, or the unions, especially Māori Team Cup, and of course later in the season with the you could call them contrived internationals against the Barbarians, but I think they actually took the opportunity to highlight their game and highlight the talent they've got available. And I think for New Zealand women's rugby, there was an opportunity also to unveil a few new players to another level of rugby, players that they wouldn't have necessarily been able to unearth had they been playing internationals against other teams, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the points that was made by Drummer Tasman, CEO interview, was that he saw the New Zealand Barbarians as being perhaps the fourth best team in the world after the Black Ferns, France, England, and then the New Zealand Barbarians are probably the next best team. So, and he's got a very good point there, to be honest. So, yeah, the quality of those games was potentially higher than you would have seen if other international games had been played. So, yeah, no, it was. So from that point of view, it was very good. To me, I think one of the big things is that the most well-known well-known rugby players are actually playing sevens rather than playing 15s normally. And I think the cancellation of the postponement of the Olympics really helped, because, again, having your Ruby Tuis, having your
Sarah Hiddeney,
all these players running around in the Farrah Palmer Cup was absolutely fantastic for the profile of that game. Also, if we look at the sevens tournament that happened, they had the four teams that was picked from what they call it now, the sevens tournament that they did for Sky.
Oh yes. Ignite sevens, yeah.
And again, I think if you look at the Ignite sevens, I think the women got more coverage than the men did in there, and I definitely saw more on social media highlighting the women players. And I think they've actually probably got a bigger profile than the men have in the sevens competition, sevens side.
Yeah, Paul, it was great to see, for example, young schoolgirl player from Christchurch, Georgia Miller, running around at Ignite Sevens, and then a week later seeing her running around in the Condor Sevens. You know, wow. You know, how good for a tournament like that to have somebody who showed she was a genuine superstar at Ignite level, a superstar on the Raz, beg your pardon, and then dropping back down to play Ignite. And then we saw her again in the New Zealand, was that the Condor Sevens? No. That was the schools tournament right at the end of the season.
Yeah. I think it's been pretty good. From that point of view, unfortunately, I don't think we'll see the sevens players play in the Farrah Palmer Cup again. Personally, I think it would be fantastic if they did, but the timing of what is normally having the Dubai Sevens in December probably means that they can't play during that window for the Farrow Palmer Cup. Now, it was interesting listening to, and I've gone blank as to the lady's name from Taranaki, who was playing 10 or 12 for them with the green hair. Wonderful player, great interview with her. But talking about how she was having to bulk up for the 15s because she'd normally play sevens.
That would have been Gail Broughton.
That's right, yeah. Gail Broughton, who was there, who was, I'm talking about how she had to bulk up for the 15s. And so if you're bulking up for the 15s in Farrow Palmer Cup and then expecting to play the Dubai sevens only a month later, I don't think that would work. Unfortunately, but I think it was a great fillip for the Farrow Palmer Cup to have them for this year. Unfortunately, I can't see it happening in the future. Unfortunately, cool. Those are the kind of topics I was going to have a chat about this week. Anything else from your side of things?
No, not really. There's nothing else that really. Sort of sticks out there. Of course, we touched a little bit upon Andy Marinos, and boy, that came out of the blue, and it seems as though there were a few people who were involved in who are around the fringes of Australian rugby who didn't know either. So there you go. I will hope that Andy Marinos has a strategic plan for Australian rugby, because he certainly didn't have one for Super Rugby when he was last sitting in that position. So no, that just really came as a huge surprise. Listen, from this down this end of the world, it's really the off season for us. So no, not a lot of information. But
let's go back on that Andy Marathon, because look, Raylene Castle, clearly not everyone's cup of tea, but you could see she had a plan. And look, if you look at how everyone's happy now that rugby is on Channel 7 and not on Fox, that was her call, folks. Now, sure, she didn't actually negotiate the deal because she was there for the initial rounds of negotiation and for setting that up. So there's got to be a hat tip for her on that one. If you think everyone's been sort of relatively positive about Dave Rennie and the Wallabies, again, that was her appointment, putting Dave Rennie in there. So a lot of the positive stuff that's happened in the second half of this year, perhaps with Australian rugby, has been her stuff that is coming to fruition now she's not there. So yes, definitely not Annie Marinos should not be getting the plaudits for the work that she did in that one. I think she had a rough time and won't get the credit for the good things she did. Sure, other things she didn't handle so great, but I think there was also an awful lot of press out there just to get her anyway.
Yep, don't disagree with what you're there in a bit. And of course, some of the things that there's a few things coming together on the field as well. I mean, so I think they probably missed an opportunity in terms of the rugby championship pool. It was. Right within their own grasp, but I actually thought maybe at the end of the day, we've given Dave Rennie a pat on the back, but you've probably got to be a little bit critical in some of those games that they played in Australia, where they probably didn't pay enough respect to the teams that they were playing, didn't take points, kickable points that were on offer, that could have probably been the difference at the end of the day. Went for the jugular and kicked to the corner. A little bit like the Crusaders, where they always go for sevens as opposed to threes. But they are a young side. They'll definitely get better. I think probably one of the real key things for them was probably losing somebody like Matt Tamua. He was so good in those in that very first game against the All Blacks. A really good organizer, and you just felt his loss from that Australian team played a really, really big part. So it's just a matter of having those guys like your two Moors of this world fit. But on saying that, giving a lot more opportunities to the Corabettis of this world and Jordan Pateas, and also they've got, they've obviously signed the likes of Suliasi Vunivalu as well, which is really exciting. So it's going to give them you know, along with Banks at fullback, it's going to give them a real sort of exciting back four, Paul.
Absolutely. But if you look at that that back line for Australia, there's actually all the experience in the decision-making. And yes, another car zooming past. All the experience was James O'Connor, Matt Tamua. They lost both into injury, having to bring in rookies at 10 and 12, really, was at international level is not great. So clearly, the injuries definitely hurt them. I think what we saw at the beginning of the season for them was they were much more willing to play for Dave Rennie, and they were wanting to play rugby, wanting to win those 50-50 balls, wanting to put their body on the lines, which we hadn't seen for the past few years under Checker, unless except for in fits and starts. So yeah, a lot of positivity there from that. Yes, perhaps should they have done better? Should they win the Rugby Championship? Probably. Have they blooded a lot of players who will be good for 2023 and 2027? Absolutely. Some disappointment short term, but I think long term things looking much brighter for them overall.
And my other real two takeaways, and basically they're from what happened on the field, we underestimated Argentina and we overestimated the All Blacks.
Yeah, well, yes. So here's a question for you then. Was it actually bad for the All Blacks to win the Rugby Championship? Has that papered over cracks? Does that mean that that perhaps certain changes might not happen that should happen?
I think the cracks are there for everybody to see, Paul. to be honest, it's not as if they're hidden cracks. I mean to say, you'd have to be a pretty one-eyed sort of journalist to look at that All Black season and go, they've won the championship. But boy, if you really really look, you know, I know Phil Gifford came out and lauded their performance against Argentina and said, "Oh, that's one of the best All Black performances he's seen in a very very long time." Really, Phil? You know, you got to win over a real understrength Argentinian team, and it took you a long, long time to break them down. And really, you know, just a few, three tries at the end probably and inflated what was probably a flattering scoreline at the end of the day, Paul.
Yeah, you just got to feel that. Ian Foster's end of season review. I won the only tournament you put me up for. In fact, I won both cups. I won the Bledisloe and I won the Rugby Championship. Therefore, it's a success. Pat me on the back. Give me my bonus. Thank you very much. Let's get on to next season. If that's the approach, then ouch. But that seems to have been some of the comments from players like Aaron Smith. Like, hey, look, we won the only competitions we were put up for. Yeah. Okay.
And you kind of wonder if that mentality also came through, because it came through with the skipper as well, Paul, criticising the media, criticising supporters. You know, that's a path that former All Black captains have not tread before. You know, previous captains will go, well, you know, there's a lot of expectation from New Zealand rugby supporters. We've got to come up with something better than that, Paul. So yeah, you speak about cracks. Where's that coming from? I ask myself.
Yeah, he was. To be fair, he had a bit that his full quote was a little bit more measured than the actual one that was put out as being the headline, but he should know better that that's actually that's what the headline's going to be. And to be fair to Aaron Smith, look, after the game, after some of their losses, he was much more honest about where they were, about their failings. I think there is. We'll have to hopefully there's that honesty inside the camp that hey, there's more we need to do, but they're kind of like, well, yeah, at least we won our competitions. So it's not all doom and gloom, which if there's that balance there, then good. It's not in. Unfortunately, I think there's not a lot of faith that balance is there at the moment. we'll have to wait and see. Cool. Well, thank you very much, sir. And I will talk to you in the new year. This is a wrap for the year.
Yeah.
The Driving Horse Show. Don't forget, so yeah, we'll be back live on Tuesday at 8 p.m. With the Driving Horse Show. That is it for 2020. I'll be back tomorrow morning with the Morning Sports Briefing, because that comes to you 365 days a year at 7 a.m. It's your best way to start the day up to speed with all the important sports news. Don't forget, folks, you can become a supporter of Driving More. Oh, sorry, I have New Zealand Sports Radio as well, over at patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio, and get some exclusive access to content, as well as help supporting us bring you this free content 52 weeks a year. So thank you very much, Stephen. Been an absolute pleasure, as always.
All good, Paul. Happy New Year to yourself. And once again, all those listeners and followers of the station.
Happy New Year.
Cheers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.